Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into the prologue of A Storm of Swords.
Yeah, wow. Ez, you know, when we first started this podcast, we were like trying to figure out what we wanted to do and all this stuff. And we're like, man, I don't know. I feel like it's just going to take forever to get through all these books. And I was like, yeah, I think that's kind of the point. Like that way we have something to talk about for the next like 7 years.
Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah. Let's actually talk about that for a second, Matt, because it's I was thinking about this. It is. It's a new book. And I feel I'm happy to be in this. This is the one we've been waiting for. This is a really exciting book. It's the best. People consider it the best. A lot of people also like, you know, dance as well. I think people like dance because it leaves a lot of those storylines unfinished that you can go and pick it up right there. It's okay, where does it go to? But so much is hinted at here, and there's so many little prophecy tie-ins that Matt and I speculate, and we sometimes even use the show to say, hey, these things are connecting much further on, you know, down the line, and there are things in this book that still matter. So, you know, a Storm of Swords is excellent, and going back through it is I've been trying to, you know, read ahead and get a little refresher, and it's fun. It's honestly a lot of fun, and it's just cool to see that we're here and we're still talking House of the Dragons coming out. All these fun things are happening. We got George still talking about stuff. Winds of Winter is closer today than it was yesterday. And, you know, that may be like a joke, but it's also true. So
So I ran this poll over on our YouTube just like a little over just 2 months ago. Said, what's your favorite Song of Ice and Fire book? And A Storm of Swords dominated the charts, not even remotely close. So Storm of Swords came in first at 45%.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite Song of Ice and Fire book? 45% said A Storm of Swords. That's crazy. So then following that was A Dance of Dragons, then A Feast for Crows, then A Clash of Kings, then A Game of Thrones. Kind of interesting. Not my preferred order. Mm-hmm. What's yours? How do you rank the five books?
Well, A Feast for Crows is awesome. I do love A Feast for Crows. Clash of Kings is not necessary. That for me is at the bottom, honestly.
Really?
I just don't. It was a great follow-up, but I feel like it keeps you in it, and there's still a lot of intrigue and stuff that's going ups and downs, and the roller coaster ride is there. Storm of Swords is where I think we all caught the same fever that George caught, and we get taken away in it. So for me, that one probably is this is at the top of my list. It's either A Storm of Swords 1 or Feast for Crows 1. I go back and forth on them, actually. Yeah. And then this is so crazy, but then A Dance with Dragons, because I'm at like when I read it, I went back and actually just did a couple point of view read throughs again with Danny's stuff. And just it's kind of, I don't know. It's just super intriguing to think about where it's going to go. And I think that's probably what it is for me, is that like, I'm always thinking about what's next in the story. And so A Feast for Crows as well, some of those storylines in there, and you have to kind of, that was a book, right, that I believe was split into two. And so, yeah, there's just a lot. That's where the story is kind of at. A Game of Thrones is above A Clash of Kings, and Clash of Kings is probably my bottom.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think most people, well, just looking at this, yeah, a lot of people have Dance of Dragons number two. I know just in talking to our good buddy, Sir Jimmy, that's where he's sort of at two. Same thing as he has Dance. And I've talked about this as well. I have a different take here. So A Storm of Swords is my number one.
Okay.
Because it's just so good. And for me, so much of it is the chapter we'll get into next time, which is Jaime 1, is the fact that in the show, right, you see Jaime Lannister way more than you do in the books. In the books, really, you don't really know Jaime all that much by the time we get to his first chapter. So then you dive into his first chapter, and it's like, I was like, what? Like, we get to read Jaime Lannister's point of view. And it was just so cool. And that to me is like the game changing. Like, everything before that is like A Clash of Kings and Game of Thrones, which will feel very similar. Everything post that is like I don't know, George just decided to start writing different. And then we start getting into Cersei chapters and getting into more sort of, I guess, villain chapters. And you get this other side of it. And we get to see like why Jaime's arc and learning like why he did what he did. It to me, it opens up every character is that much more interesting. And you begin to look at characters just beyond sort of black and white. So yeah, that's why I love A Storm of Swords. So I have A Storm of Swords at one. I actually have a Game of Thrones at two.
Okay.
And it's so much of it is just because I think it's just such a good of all of like the books, some of the books I've ever read. The opening scene, I just love it. I love
memorable. Like, yeah.
I love like the first five chapters of that book, including the prologue. Because you start out and you're in like the Night's Watch and who are these guys and what are they doing? And then they get attacked by an other, and you're talking about a guy who is a knight, right? And Waymar Royce, right? Yeah. I mean, he's a knight and he's going up against this White Walker, and it's just what just happened. And then the next chapter, we find one of these Night's Watch members who we don't really know that much about, but has now run all the way south. Probably not all the way south, but has run south of the wall, and he's being executed. And it's like, wait, what's going on?
What's going on, dude?
And then we find dire wolves beyond the wall. And it's just, I just love those first five chapters. I just love the whole thing. And then John goes to the wall, and wait, what's the deal about his mother? And Benjen is lost, and just so much about, I think it's just such an amazing setup to the series.
Right.
But I just love it. And then it ends obviously with Ned Stark, and it's like, oh my God, all hell just broke loose.
Right.
And then when Catelyn takes Tyrion, it's like, oh my God, what did you just do?
You're actually right. I think that's, yeah, because we wouldn't get to all the other juiciness and like the richness of the rest of the story if we didn't have such a great hook, you know?
Yeah.
So we do have to give credit to the first book.
Yeah. And there's only five books. So, I mean, everyone's going to have them in just sort of different orders that they like. So, yeah. So I have a Game of Thrones at number two. Then I have a Dance with Dragons. And just because, you know, all the reasons everyone loves a Dance with Dragons. It's also like all the Jon stuff. And I think that's why like Feast for me. Feast I actually have is my least favorite book. And I think it's just because Feast and Dance are sort of split into two. And I just sort of prefer the characters in Dance with Dragons more than I prefer the characters in A Feast for Crows. Especially because like Bran, you know, is like not even in A Feast for Crows. So I love Bran's arc, and there's way more of it in Dance Dragons. So I think that's just if for no other reason. But really, some people love both. Some people like one or the other. That's just the side I'm on. So I have Feast at the bottom, then I have Clash as my second, I have it below Game of Thrones. I don't know what it is about Clash of Kings. I think it's just, I love that we get to meet Stannis and Davos, but then, you know, there's some Theon chapters, and I'm just, the Greyjoys, they just bore me. I don't know what it is. Every time I have to read about the Greyjoys, I just get so, they're just my least favorite character. I know some people love them, and Euron's crazy.
Right. And that's when it will pick up, right? Is when Euron shows up and stuff. So, or when he gets more involved, if you will. But
yeah, I think it's some of it also because like they're the first characters that feel outside of the story, even though Jon sort of is, he's like up at the wall. But so much of Jon's story, at least in a Game of Thrones and a Clash of Kings, involves what's going on in Westeros. Whereas like Daenerys' story is so far separate that it's kind of its own thing. It's much more manageable in a Game of Thrones, where it's just this one character who's way over here, but where everyone's talking about her and why it's very important. And then you add in the Greyjoys in a Clash of Kings, and now they're like over here. And so it's like, it gets kind of spread out more. And but obviously by Dance of Dragons, it's all over the place, but it's just like, initially it's kind of like, it feels like a side story and I just don't care.
Yeah,
I know. But obviously the Battle of Blackwater, and there's a lot of great stuff in A Clash of Kings, but I just sort of, it's my second least favorite, I guess. And then a Feast is my least favorite.
Yeah,
just because I just prefer of the two, which was supposed to be one book. I think I'm much more on the Dance Dragon side. So
yeah, it's cool.
So yeah, so we kind of line up a little here, but clearly Storm of Swords, 45%.
People love it, man.
People love it.
Yeah, and it's such a great story, you know. So just as we get into this before we've started, because just want to give you guys some context here. So it continues where A Clash of Kings ends, right? It's we had the War of the Five Kings of Westeros. Dany is strengthening her forces over in the east, and then you've got this threat of maybe others or like a wildling army, something's going on. But we have 12 different characters that we're going to follow, and then. Yeah, sort of 10 tell the majority of the story. Let me see here. And then we kind of pick up this is our prologue. Matt will read a summary here in a second for you, but it's Chet. We're starting up north, and it goes. I mean, again, we're stretched pretty far in terms of we are far north. We're above the wall. We start there. We'll talk about the horn blowing, sounding three times, and then we go all the way back down to Dany. You know, we're stretched all the way across Dessos, which is just great. You always think about John far north and Dany way over there, and it really, I don't know, it's just an immense, crazy
world.
Yeah, story.
Okay, all right, well, let's dive right into it. So the prologue here of A Storm of Swords. So Chet, again, remember all the prologues are mostly like totally different characters. Mm-hmm. So Chet's hatred of Jon Snow and Samwell Tarly for the uprising for usurping his comfortable position as steward to Maester Aemon has boiled over. He and Lark are the sistermen are conspiring to desert the Night's Watch along with Small Paul and about a dozen other sworn brothers. The traitors plan to kill Lord Commander Mormont and several other officers to prevent anyone from actively seeking them out as they desert. Thorin Smallwood and his party are the only of three rangings to return so far. And they have seen the size of Mance Rayder's army. Thorin wishes to give battle to Mance's army, mainly because there are so few warriors in it. It is composed of mostly women and children. Chet and his men plan to kill in the dead of night and flee to places of safety, leaving Thorin Smallwood and Otwin Wythers as senior rangers. Thorin won't search for them because he wants to lead the attack, and Wythers would rather flee to the wall and could not care less about deserters. That evening, the watch gathers before Mormont and his senior men, who announce that they will march in force against the wildling army, which is about 10 days away. Mormont acknowledges that they might all die and has his men reaffirm their oaths to the Night's Watch. Meanwhile, Chet worries that some of his deserters may lose their resolve. Late in that night, Chet awakens to find it snowing. The desertion plans are ruined because the turn cloaks can be easily tracked in the fresh snow. Chet still seeks to get some satisfaction from the night and creeps over to the sleeping Samwell Tarly with the intention of murdering him. He is interrupted as a ranger in the distance sounds his horn. Sam awakens, and he and Chet hear the horn blow three times. Both men are shocked at the realization of what three horn blows mean, a signal that has not been used in hundreds and thousands of years. Three horn blows means others. Chet looks down and realizes he has wet himself.
Yeah, no kidding. Whew. No kidding. Matt, could you, like, it is kind of it's a cool opening for that simple fact that you have had the horn sounds three times. Three blows means others. Hasn't been sounded like that in centuries upon centuries. And would that not cause a man to just, like, who is the guy?
What?
Matt, who's the person blowing that horn that is dying? You know there it's a dead man blowing that horn. Because
do you even believe it at first?
No.
Do you think maybe it's an echo
or yeah, you're probably like, I don't, that can't be right. Right. But there's something eerie about their proximity to the woods. And there's just been something about the Fist of the First Men that I don't know. It always kind of set them on edge. Corin Halfhand also even said like the old sort of powers are waking again. And these things are starting to move and creep throughout the woods. It is exactly what has gotten the wildlings all you know, rustled up. And now, and it's a great way to do this, is that we wondered what is causing all of this. And it's the Night's Watch that gets attacked. They see firsthand exactly what has rooted out the wildlings and what they've had to deal with for so long. Night's Watch has been nice and warm up on their wall, or back at Castle Black, if you will. I don't know if they're warm there or not, but still warmer than maybe the wildlings are, and not as harassed by the others. And this is, I'm literally picturing, like, so I love to really, really get into the moment, because, and I know we're jumping right to the end here, but I want you guys to think about this. When you reread this book, this does bring the energy. Like, this book has a lot of energy. It's people's favorite for a reason, because I can picture myself chatting with Matt in that camp, and I can picture, like, all right, cool. One horn sound, like, ah, cheesy cow. Like, here we, you know, we're not like we got to do something. We're playing some game around the fire. And then the second one, it's like, okay, eyebrows raised, like, hold on a second. Right. And then the third, it's like, you know, like, oh God. Like, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like it would be, especially if it's cold and it's dark outside, it's kind of scary anyways. The night is dark and full of terrors. So yeah, it's just kind of a surreal moment there. And Chet, now again, was planning this whole takeover, a coup, was going to go in and kill people, assassinate them. He was going to run to Craster's Keep. You know, he was out. He had had enough of this. And it is kind of crazy. And what we can do in a second here is track down some of the smaller characters in this. I love to click on, you know, go to the wiki, click on some links and track a couple of these individuals, because what is his name? Thorin Smallwood, I think, is an absolute idiot. Wants to, like, take on all of Mance's forces and stuff. And, like, you're hearing his strong opinion. Is he going to be able to persuade the old bear to do some of these things? Chet's like, I'm out. Like, that's a death sentence, you know, just to even be, we shouldn't even be up this far. We've ranged, we figured it out. We've got reports that there are thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of people against 300. Like, the conversation is, well, there's men and women, or they're mostly women and children. Let me go ahead and find it real quick. But, like, that hunt, I mean, just a huge force, 300 against 300. Now, there was a great movie where 300 men stood their ground. And different.
Great movie.
Different movie, different setting and terrain. But still, I understand what he's saying here. He said, I should be safe back at the wall, tending the bloody ravens and making fires for old Maester Aemon. He's super pissed about Samwell taking his job, by the way. That's who Chet is.
Well, it's probably a pretty cush job.
Absolutely, it was. And that's what he says. It's all because Sam can read. Yeah, can you imagine? You just got to, I mean, Maester Aemon's pretty easy going.
So, you're fired because you can't read.
Yeah, really. I mean, well, the other thing, too, is that, like, he's all upset and pissed, but Sam's still here with him. You know, it's not like Sam got to stay back there either. He's just upset. He's just been harboring this kind of resentment towards him since, you know, he was recruited and stuff. But yeah, I mean, sorry, Chet, you know?
Yeah.
Like, sucks, bro. But yeah, then just a couple of the other ones here, like Lark the Sisterman is, again, you know, an interesting character. And then Smallpaw.
Smallpaw. Right. Right.
I mean,
he's the one, he's theoretically, right? He's related to Duncan the Tall, right?
Yep, exactly. And they make a lot of references to that. They, here we go. Smallpaw blinked his black little eyes. Maybe he had forgotten, Chet thought. He was stupid enough to forget most anything. Why do we have to kill the old bear? Why don't we just go off and let him be? You think he'll let us be, said Lark. He'll hunt us down. You want to be hunted, you great muttonhead? And so they go back and forth. Smallpaw's forgetting, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. And he's described as a huge, huge man, big hands, big sort of shoulders, and just stupid. I think at one point he's described as being as thick as a castle wall, right? I think, in this. So that's where people get that whole dunk, you know, connection. But,
you know, interesting thing about Lark here. This is sort of like a spoiler for what's going to happen later. In A Storm of Swords, right? Is that he at one point gets turned into a white, right?
Yeah.
And then he gets taken out by ravens.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
So that Sam can be rescued by Cold Hands.
Yep. It's that whole moment where, yeah, and these were the, yeah, it's the effects of this very moment, actually. Like later on, you'll see Small Paul, Lark, the Sisterman there. But yeah, they're coming after Sam and Gilly, I think, right? And yeah. Sam the Slayer steps up. So that's flash forward a little bit for you guys. But I mean, God, that's a great moment too. But all that comes because of this moment right here where, you know, and this is such a really good style by George to kind of lay this, like what, like the irony here or the like the start of this is these guys are going to kill the old bear. Like we like the old bear, you know, we like he's been good to John, gave him the sword. Is it a special Valyrian steel sword? Is it got some mystery behind it? That's all up for debate, but he's good. And Corn Halfhand likes him. And now we're following this guy, Chet, who wants to kill him. And he's got a lot of guys. He's got a lot of guys worked up to do this. And then for it all to turn with three blows of the horn at the end is kind of ironic and just crazy. We were thinking, God, this is awful. And then it really turned into something awful, right? Because maybe they could have fought against Chet and his men. Maybe they could have survived or whatever. But yeah. So, hey, and remember too, Sam is tending those ravens. As you said, that connection later on, he's tending these ravens. He's good to them. That might help him out.
Yeah, you know, something interesting, I'm just thinking about the prologues here. Because the prologues of the books are sort of very important because they... In some ways, they don't necessarily directly feel like they connect to like the story that ends up taking place in the book. But I feel like all the prologues sort of do serve as this reminder or backdrop a little bit to some of the bigger things that are going on. Because the prologue in A Game of Thrones is the Night's Watch member that, right, they take on the other, they lose.
Oh, yeah.
He runs south, gets his head cut off. But it's like setting up magical creatures and winter is coming, and like the idea of like winter is coming, that's where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
At least as a reader, the second book is Melisandre. We first meet her and they're on the beach and we kill a maester, right?
Yeah.
And then this one is we're gonna desert and mutiny against the Night's Watch,
right? Can't do that. We know that's not a good thing. And we know, yeah, I get that's what Chet's wrestling with. He says it. He says that he's thinking about heading. They had thought about going back to Castle Black. This whole thing started with the, you know, trying to find, as you said, Ben Stark and Sir Waymar Royce. And he's thinking, I got to go back to Craster's Keep, or I got to go somewhere and settle. Better to kind of settle north of the Wall. You actually get a lot of Chet's backstory too, and just sort of what would send him to the Wall. The nature of the Night's Watch, and then why he wants to do this, why he wants to kind of, you know, he doesn't want to face down. And I found the number, by the way, 20 or 30,000. We didn't state a count versus 300, you know, Chet's kind of like, I mean, Thor and Smallwood,
he can't read, man.
Well, he can't read. Yeah, right. But I mean,
well, Thorin's a moron.
He is
Thoron the moron, because I think that's what doesn't Corin Halfhand say that about him, where he's like only an idiot would believe that.
Oh, what's earlier, last book,
one of the things he said, only fools like Thorin Smallwood despise the wildlings. They are as brave as we are, John. Corin Halfhand to Jon Snow.
Aha, yeah, he's not well regarded. I mean, he's got a good spirit about him, and he's a true kind of, you know, member of the Night's Watch, but he's not the smartest, and he's not. He's not really thinking this through. He's the guy who would be taking 300 to march against 30,000, and he'd be standing there going like, "Oh shoot,
I messed up."
Like that's I don't know. He's not doing numbers right in his head or something. So, but yeah, they're going up the Milkwater, and it would take them right past. They say that would take them right past the Fist of the First Men, the ancient ring fort where the Night's Watch had made their camp. Now that's interesting too. This is this ancient ring fort. So this is where I love that George throws in, what is the Fist of the First Men, you know? Right. And some of these whites that are laying there might have been laying there for a long time. Like, this could be, how old are these guys? You know what I mean? These others that attack.
Yeah, and it's such a good introduction to them, too, because we see one, but it's so mysterious in the original, or in the prologue to A Game of Thrones. And then you know, John's just at the wall learning. We go beyond the wall just to the heart tree, but like the whole like fear of the White Walkers and the others, you know, they're out there, but you don't really feel it. Then the second book, we start focusing on R'hllor a little bit more. But you know, we're going beyond the wall and things are starting to get a little more mysterious. And then we open right here and we are blowing the horn to signify the others are coming.
Yeah. Right.
I know. Like, I think that's another reason why everyone loves this book, is because like all of the stakes that we've sort of felt this is like all the other books, the first two books have been setting up for big moments to take place here, and that do all take place in this book.
Yeah, they do.
Not that there's more big moments to come, because there are, but this is the first book. This is the book where it's like, it feels like a lot, everything else is just so much bigger.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, for sure. And it's starting with this huge kind of battle here. God, the thing is too, that we just get to the, like, you and I are wanting to even like talk about the battle. That's later chapter. That's the aftermath is later, but that's really what we get to here is major losses, major turns, major, you know, a retreat for the men of the Night's Watch. All the things we'd heard about, all the teasing that Tyrion had said, or, you know, when he's talking to Jon about Grumpkins and different things out there in the woods and stuff. Now we're seeing it. Now we're really out there, and we see what they're facing. Sorry, I just got also really sad for a second because Benjen, where's he at, man?
I know.
Jeez,
we still don't know.
We still don't know, dude. It ticks me off, to be quite honest. George, like there's some things. I mean, I get that the story has to get, like, Dany. I'm not too worried. It's like, I know that story is going to continue. I know she's going to go somewhere. But what happened to Benjen?
Right.
You know, come on, man. I don't know. Sorry. It just gets kind of, because that's the whole point. They're up here. I keep seeing Benjen's name.
It gets emotional.
It does. And it's like, he's been gone for how long? Is he dead? Is he just dead? This is such a ridiculous tie-in, but I've been watching with my wife. I've been watching the like Downton Abbey, and dude, there's a whole season where, you know, this guy's dead. It's like Benjen. He's been missing for like a year and a half in a foreign country. Reports are he got roughed up in jail, probably dead. Everyone thinks he's dead. And then finally you find out like 2-3 years later, yeah, he's dead. And it's like the whole time you just strung us along with this whole like, well, maybe there's like, we're holding on some hope.
Yeah.
I guarantee that Benjen Stark is gone and he's dead. And we've been holding out for years that he's someone special, and he's not, Matt. That's what George does to us. And that's what's frustrating. And that's why we've all wanted a conclusion to some of this stuff. Freaking nuts. Sorry. Quick Benjen rant.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
We still don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. Some of these other guys I was looking up too, man. Like, let me see here. You mentioned Lark. Otton Withers. Okay. He's in the Clash of Kings. He's part of the Great Ranging. Leaves Castle Black searching for the wildlings. He is one of the commanders of the Night's Watch at the Fist of the First Men. He urges retreat when the wildling masses are discovered. He is second in command on the Raging behind Lord Commander Mormont. You know, what Chet talks about here is like, if we take out Smallwood, then this is the guy if we take out Jorah Mormont, like, he's not going to listen to the urgings of Smallwood, right? He's going to be,
yes.
So next up is going to be Withers, and he's going to want us to fall back into retreat. So anyway, we never get there because
no, we do not.
They're all just killed in the snow up there, and it's all for nothing. But yeah, that's another character to kind of bring up in this prologue, I guess. Chet goes on for a while.
Yeah, Chet does. Yeah, I'll pull him up too here.
Here's one of those lines. Just want to read it for everybody too. So let me see here. Small Paul, just real quick, as you pull up Chet, and we'll talk about Small Paul and then Chet. Chet said Small Paul, as they trudged along the stony game trail through the sentinels and the soldier pines, "What about the bird?" So this is Small Paul saying this to Chet. What about the bird? What bloody bird? The last thing he needed now was some muttonhead going on about a bird. The old bear's raven, Small Paul said. If we kill him, who's going to feed his bird?
I know. Why does he care?
Why does he care? But see, you know, why does he care? Why does George write that in there about the bird? The bird talks. It's something special. It is definitely, people who talk about blood raven and the connections, you know, being the three-eyed crow, whatever it may be, this bird matters and is a big deal. So anyways, he goes on and says, yeah, you know, you can have it. I don't want to hurt no bird. But that's a talking bird. What if he tells what we did? Okay, so there's the line. So the big man said, but that's a talking bird. What if it tells what we did? Lark then laughed and said, small paw, thick as a castle wall, he mocked. And then, you know, small paw's telling him to shut up. They're arguing back and forth. But man, it goes on. Can I keep the bird? I like the bird. He's yours, right? All good. But it's this whole conversation about his bird. And it might tell on us. And I think it is telling, Matt. I think this whole time it's telling somebody the goings ons and in the Night's Watch. So
and then to think later that the Ravens start taking some of these guys out.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? That is crazy. I wonder if Mormont's Raven was I know Mormont's Raven makes it and everything, but God, it's just, what was his trek like? Let me pull him up while you have Chet there. I think the Raven's Mormont's, got his own wiki page.
Mormont's Raven. I think he does. Well, Mormont's Raven. I mean, is he? I mean, there's almost too much going on with Mormont's Raven to not be.
Matt, there's a whole. I mean, look, his wiki page has more on it than most of our main characters. Like, it's
that. Well, because he's constantly saying stuff.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, look, he's in every book. Well, words spoken by Mormont's Raven. Get rid of all these stupid ads here. Well, I mean, good ads. I guess they make money for this website to continue to run, right? Which does provide us with tons of resources, right? So there is that. But yeah, I mean, look at the words spoken. I mean, Khorne, obviously, you know, King. I mean, he calls people King. He calls John King and all of these things.
Wow.
How does he know all the, how does a raven at the wall know the word king? How often is the word king spoken at the wall?
Okay. Hold on. First of all, this is a great resource because I've never seen the movie. I've never seen them actually. This must be an addition. I would be cool to see when they updated this because I don't remember this being here. But, and I've looked at Mormont's Raven's page and I've looked at, back when we started this podcast, we were Raven City, right? We were Ravens and Crows going back and forth between the difference.
We got talking told to about, stop.
Yeah, we did, but we're back on it now because look at this, man. Some of the words. So in A Storm of Swords, chapter 18, Samwell 1, the Raven says sorry. So for what, Matt? Sorry to who? Why? You know
why? How does it? Well, I guess animals do know that. Animals do feel sorry, especially dogs, man. Dogs definitely. You can tell. Like sometimes if you're like playing with a dog and you pretend like. You know, they sort of, if you pretend like they bit you, you can tell they like feel bad. So sorry is a feeling that animals do feel. But then I guess this is the crazy thing, right? Is because the birds are only supposed, like, can a bird associate sorry with feeling sorry? Because that's kind of crazy.
Right. Dude, I don't know.
Like, I can get a bird learning the word corn because it's like food. Corn, you know, because it learns a word. That's pretty easy. That's food. But to learn sorry, that's like next level. Because you have to think about how you feel in order to feel sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a couple more. I mean, I don't know, man. Some of these words, they get a little scary. Sun, you know? So it's like referring to someone's son. You also have obey. Huh? You start stringing some of them together, man. You can take this a lot of different places. Bones.
I could see bones.
Bones, father, girls, gone. Who's gone? Matt? Who is gone?
You can learn gone. They're not here right now. I get that.
Yeah. Well, how about this one? Why?
That's a lot.
Why?
That's a lot for an animal to process.
Oh, God. Sorry, guys.
Although I'll tell you right now, I don't trust ravens or crows.
Yeah. No, I don't. They're tricksy birds, right? They're definitely tricksy birds. I don't know. There, have you seen the thing too on the on when George, let me see here, capitalizes stuff, the corn code? Have you seen
that? I think we have looked at that.
I think we did.
That would be a good extended edition or a
standalone
corn code episode.
I got them pulled up right here. Maybe we'll go right into an extended edition on it.
Okay.
Because that's
Should
cool.
we eat corn dogs while we do it?
God, I'm hungry right now.
When's the last time you had a corn dog? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been. I normally eat them around Halloween. So
that's weird. Just
tradition in my family. We didn't go trick-or-treating. Grew up in a religious house, man. That's Satan's Day.
Corn dogs for Halloween?
Corn dogs and Peter Pan, buddy.
Okay. Wait, you dip like your corn dog in peanut butter?
No. We watched Hook.
I thought you meant like the Peter Pan peanut butter.
I don't know. That might be kind of good, though.
Does that really still exist?
You can't go wrong with a good corn
dog. Remember they have like the Peter Pan peanut butter?
I think it does. They might have changed the label, but I feel like it does. Peanut butter is good for you, man. Like I'm
dipping a corn dog in it? That's going to be weird.
Yeah, it's a bit much. Mustard and ketchup's where you got to be on that. I don't know if you can do.
I think.
Yeah, it's too much.
I don't really like corn to begin with.
Right. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I don't either. Corn's also got too many carbs, so I'm out.
I like popcorn. Eat a lot of that.
Yeah. God, dude,
I guess is corn.
How many times does he cry corn? And when it's capitalized, it matters. Guys, you got to check out the extended edition. We'll do it because it's been years since we've done that.
Okay, I'm down.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, yeah,
finishing up the chapter here. So I don't know. As a prologue, I have it as sort of honestly, the big takeaway is that the horn has been sounded and the others are coming. The White Walkers are coming by sea and by land. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Yep. That's it, kind of Matt. That's it. No. So, I mean, the whole
bit of it is where there's just,
let me tell you. So you guys, like in this, essentially, it's just Chet complaining about stuff. So you learn more about like, you know, who's in command and who, like as when the horn sounds, now you have to kind of comb back through. And once they're on the move and they're in full retreat, who's left over? Who was killed? How does Sam make it? Where did, you know, So Chet is still moving along, right, with everybody. They still have this whole plot. So we're going to get to Craster's Keep. So, yeah, we're going to have to track them. And he just gives us a lot of insight into – we now know his plan. And we got to keep that up in our mind as we move forward. We're worried about the others, but we still have sort of an enemy in our midst that we have to deal with. And that causes, again, the reader to be on edge a little bit every time – you hear that Chet's doing something or we're in a Samwell chapter and he's dealing with something. You're like, oh shoot, watch out for that guy. He was trying to kill you. You know, he came in and pissed at Richard.
And the White Walkers are back.
And they're back. So the fear is not just outside the Sentinels, right? Outside of their watch or outside the fence. It's also inside too. And that's what kind of my big takeaway from all of this was. And then, you know, just little bits about him thinking about Amen, and also him thinking about why he, you know, the girl that he tried to hook up with, there's all that whole piece, you know, with I don't know, him being all salty about why he was actually sent to the wall, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, his bloody old pus bags and his face, pox and all that kind of stuff, and then the town sort of, I don't know, prostitute, doesn't want to hook up with him, kills her.
Yeah,
that whole backstory. But like you said, Matt, it's not much. It's all
sometimes
this
it happens. Up. Yeah, sometimes they're small chapter. I mean, honestly, this is I don't like to use the word worst, but of the prologues, I think this is the one that's the weakest, I guess, to say the least. Because A Feast for Crows prologue is awesome. Because that's Pate, the Alchemist.
Yeah. And, The Dance with Dragons is too. Yeah, they're really good. So yeah, it's just kind of because they get into more of the mystical, magical element. Right. And like the Melisandre one was cool too, because you're like, whoa, how did that poison situation happen? The biggest thing with this, and each of them have that element,
the
of
white, yeah, right.
It's the others. The fact that they're back. You can't do much more than that, other than they're there and they're gonna be killing people, and it's gonna be brutal. Because we've already seen it. We've seen it in the prologue. Right. We know it's bad. So
yeah. Okay. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, with that, be sure to stay tuned for extended edition. And be sure to tune in to the next episode, where we will be covering Jamie 1 of A Storm of Swords. We're going to have Nikki, who was on a few weeks ago, right? Kale Easy, our Lannister loyalist, as we can definitely call her. So be sure to go check out her TikTok, right, at Kale_Easy. She definitely posts stuff over there. Be sure to follow Ez and I on TikTok, by the way, at Super Games Bros. As posted on our hyperspace hangout one for our Star Wars content, cranking all those
out. Are fun. Sure,
TikTok's great. I love it.
Love it.
It's just so easy to just do 7 to 15 to a minute's worth of content.
Yeah. By the way, guys, sincerely, I know we sometimes use plugs just at the end. Go check out Matt's TikTok. He's being modest. It's blowing up and I love it.
It is. I had 1 million views last week. It's crazy.
That's crazy, man. That is crazy.
<It's insane. laughs> If we had 1 million downloads, we'd be full timers. So
well, hey, we used to.
We did.
During season 8.
So anywho, guys. So all right. Well, as always, thank you guys for watching here on YouTube. Thank you guys for listening. Be sure to get all of our extended premium content either through Apple Premium or over on Patreon. We definitely got to we'll get it queued up this week. Ez and I were kind of had sort of little mini vacations weekend stuff this month. So getting back on track here. We'll get the Zoom hangout scheduled for you guys for our Bannerman as well. So be sure to stay tuned for all of that stuff. Be sure to like, comment, favorite, subscribe on iTunes or on YouTube. We will see you next week. And remember that winter is coming.